Welcome back. As we talk about kidney donation and a very special program that's been started here at Johns Hopkins University in Baltimore, Dr. Robert Montgomery is here in the studio. He's Associate Professor of Surgery and Director of the Comprehensive Transplant Center at Johns Hopkins. On the line with us from Banff, Canada, is Dr. Francis Delmonico. He's president-elect of the United Network for Organ Sharing. And again, here in the studio at WYPR is Summer Gentry. She's with the Laboratory for Information and Decision Systems at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology. She's been doing some fascinating work on what happens when you try to match pairs of people across the country systematically to find those who are compatible in kidney transplants. Dr. Montgomery, you wanted to go back to the point I was trying to get to about the risk to the donor and how the donor feels as opposed to how the recipient feels.
Well, Diane, safety, you know, is a paramount issue because this situation of organ donation from live donors is unique in medicine because you have a normal person who doesn't need an operation, who's undergoing an operation for another person.
Exactly.
And so you have to be sure that they're going to be safe, and you have to be sure that the gift they give to the other person, it realizes its full potential. And so that operation has to be as safe as possible. Now, anytime you undergo an anesthetic or have any type of an operation, there's risk involved. For this particular operation, as I mentioned earlier, the likelihood of dying is about 3 in 10,000. But you're right in that there are other things, you know, that aren't as extreme as mortality that can occur when you have an operation.
Such as?
Hernias, wound problems, chronic pain.
Yeah.
The likelihood of having one of those things happen is about 10% or less. The likelihood of having long-term consequences from those sorts of complications is far less than that. And there's been a lot of surveys done of donors, a lot of research interest in this particular question.
Sure.
And it's pretty clear that patients, donors, get a tremendous benefit psychologically from the act of giving, and particularly to someone that they care about. And you can imagine if you're driving your mother to dialysis three times a week and watching her sit on a dialysis machine for 4 or 5 hours at a time, that has a major impact on your life.
Of course.
So there's a lot more types of benefit than what might be immediately.
I just didn't want to let the idea that this is without pain, that this is without any kind of risk, somehow get transmitted, because there are, you know, for the healthy patient to give up a kidney, there is a certain amount of discomfort, to say the least.
Sure. Now,
involved.
We now apply minimally invasive surgical procedures to the donor operation for live donors. So, in fact, the kidney is removed from a very small incision, and it's really kind of revolutionized that aspect of
donation.
That's
good to know. Dr. Delmonico, explain, if you would, how a paired exchange program would work.
Well, Diane, it's a paired donation. So it's a simultaneous giving. And I think that's the important concept that needs to be transmitted. It's a paired donation. So, for example, if I wanted to give to you, Diane, and I could not because of blood type incompatibility, perhaps at the same time I could give to another individual so that another incompatible paired donor could give to you. And that's, in fact, what has occurred. The group at Hopkins has done a great job in propelling this in New England and in the Midwest section of the country in Ohio, or other locations in which such a procedure has occurred. Two donors give simultaneously. They're giving to individuals who are that are compatible with them, but that circumstance has arisen because they wanted to give to somebody and they were incompatible with that recipient. And so another incompatible pair was identified, and the donors and recipients are then compatible with each other, and a paired simultaneous donation occurs. That's all in the concept of gift giving, and it's a commendable procedure.
And now, turning to you, Summer Gentry, I know you've done studies across the country, simulated studies of how this might actually work, how you would find these pairs and create this kind of compatibility.
Exactly. Well, there are two steps, really. One is to decide who would be compatible with whom, so that there's a person with whom there's a possibility of a paired donation. And then for some people, there may be many people they could do a paired donation with. And the question that I've looked at is, who are the best people to be matched with which other pairs? So how many transplants can you get from all of the people who are willing to give this gift? And that's what you want to do is honor their willingness to give a kidney by making sure that the most people benefit from this paired donation.
And on a simulated basis, what were your conclusions?
Well, we estimated that there are between 2,500 and 4,500 patients every year who have these incompatible donors and who would possibly benefit from paired donation. And if we used optimization to decide which people should be paired with which other people, we could get a large number of transplants, and they would be of high HLA matching quality, and you could also incorporate people's preferences. So if a patient, say, was, as Dr. Montgomery was saying, if a patient has various tissue sensitivities and they're tissue incompatible with a whole huge number of people, they might be willing to travel across the country to get a transplant, where someone else who is actually compatible with many people would only want to do a transplant if they could stay in their home center. So now we can say all of the patients' needs, all of the individual hospitals' needs, they can all be met by using optimization to incorporate what these different players want.
Now, as you think about people who are prepared to put their names on a list, for example, because a loved one needs a kidney and he or she is not in a position to donate, either because of the wrong tissue type or blood type, does that person then put his name on a list saying, I am willing to donate to a stranger in order that my loved one may receive a kidney from someone else who is compatible?
Yes, exactly. And what we want to do is be careful with all of that, with the gift that those people are willing to give, and say, we are going to make sure that we make smart decisions about who gets paired with who else, so that the most people can get a transplant.
When you say smart decisions, talk about what you mean there.
Well, some people, like I was saying, are tissue incompatible with almost everyone.
I see.
We call them highly sensitized.
Okay.
And those people might have only one other pair in the country that they might do a paired donation with. Therefore, we need to make sure that that one pair that they could do a paired donation with doesn't get matched, hurriedly with someone else. So we are making sure that overall, when you look at all of the people who are willing to donate kidneys to their loved ones, we are making the smartest decisions about who trades with who.
Dr. Montgomery, to what extent do you think this could actually increase that donor organ, that organ donor base for people who are waiting across the country?
Well, nobody knows exactly what the figures are, but we have done some computer simulations that are based on certain assumptions. Many of the assumptions are factual, and some are, you know, essentially our best guesses. And or I should say that the assumptions are based on facts. And when we've done that sort of work, we've come up with the maximum number would be 6,000. And if you did a kidney paired donation from that pool of 6,000, then you would likely, with the optimization type of approach, get 50% of those patients paired successfully. So you would go from, you know, no transplants to 3,000 additional transplants.
Okay, then comes the question that was raised on a news broadcast the other night. How can you be sure that people are not selling their organs for a certain amount of money? One volunteer donor said he needed the money. He sold his organ for $12,000 because he needed it. How do you prevent that from happening?
Well, you know, this is such a separate issue, and it's very important, I think, to draw clear lines around this. The way that patients would be identified and their donors and submitted to a national pool would be through transplant centers. So there wouldn't be we haven't envisioned some sort of an online registry that people can, you know, kind of come forward with someone who hasn't been screened, hasn't been hasn't gone through evaluation.
But one could do it personally.
Well, but there are checks and balances that each transplant center has to make sure that sort of thing doesn't happen.
At 27 before the hour, you're listening to the Diane Rehm Show. Let me give you a scenario, and you all can play with this. Suppose I need a kidney, and no one in my family has blood or tissue type compatible with my own. And I, through lots of research, find someone who is, in fact, compatible. And I personally go to that person and say, I'll pay you $10,000 or $50,000 or whatever for your kidney. How are you going to know that that's happened, Dr. Montgomery?
Well, we have a process. Each transplant center in the country has a process that they go through to ensure that that sort of thing doesn't happen. The donors are screened by psychologists, by nephrologists, by transplant surgeons, and we could never say 100%. We could never say that's never happened. But this isn't done in sort of a willy-nilly way. I mean, this is something that we're very aware of, that possibility could exist, and we do everything we can to be sure that isn't happening.
Summer.
Oh, I'd like to say that problem is not actually specific to paired donation, and in a way, paired donation would alleviate that problem, because if you had a donor who was very willing but not compatible, you might not be in such a desperate situation that you would need to pay someone
That's good to know. All right, let's open the phones 1-800-433-8850. Let's go first to Steve in New York City. You're on the air.
Hi. Well, you answered one of my questions about giving for a friend if he move up on the list, and that's essentially what the paired donation does to a degree. I had another question. If I donate a kidney, same the other kidney goes bad. Do I get a preferential spot on the list? I just was curious.
And that's interesting. Go ahead, sir.
Diane, the answer to that is that someone in this country who gives a kidney, were they themselves to need a kidney later on in their lives? And this is very, very, very rare because the donor has to be found to be medically well, and there ought not to be any possibility determined.
But I could have an accident.
That the donor is at increased risk of developing kidney failure themselves later on. Nevertheless, they do get a priority for a deceased donor kidney if that were to be a necessity later on in their life.
Well, there are two types of paired kidney exchanges or donations that have occurred, and the caller refers to one of them, which one can call list donation, and that's where if you have an incompatible donor and your donor gives a kidney to someone at the top of the deceased donor list, then that donor's loved one would receive priority on the list for a deceased donor kidney. That's a little bit complicated, but it's not a direct donation between two pairs. I think most of us in the field have felt is that the directed donation between two pairs is probably preferable because it has the hope of getting the most people transplanted.
Dr. Robert Montgomery, he's Associate Professor of Surgery, Director of the Comprehensive Transplant Center at Johns Hopkins University. When we come back, more of your calls, questions, comments. Stay with us.